Blog Talk Radio.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in with me, the past listeners as well as current listeners. I want to thank y'all for tuning in, all right? Now, before I get started on this broadcast, I want to remind everybody listening to this broadcast to spread the word of Real Talk, whether it be on social media, whether it's in blogs or forums, whatever is on the internet that you're accessing, spread it around like wildfire. To let everybody know that Real Talk is in effect and in the house every Monday through Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are on live, baby. Woo! Tonight's episode of Real Talk, First Ladies Edition, is going to be dedicated to another aspect of First Ladies that not everybody gets to learn. You know what I'm saying? Now, so I know what you're thinking, people. Is it about trends? Is it about transcending something fashionable? Well, let me tell you something. The trend things, you think of in contemporary terms, like something is happening right now and everybody's getting into this and that. Well, this happens even with the first ladyship, right? Even first ladies have an effect on our culture, okay? What we get here is that Dr. Watson, who you may know as the author of The President's Wives, the second edition. Of course, we covered the first two chapters on previous broadcasts. So chapter three will be the next chapter to cover here. Now, little attention has been paid to the experiences and lives of President's wives who served before Eleanor Roosevelt, the first lady who served from 1933 to 1945. The limited body of scholarship on first ladies often focuses only on the modern era, ignoring the rich and important historical development of the office of the first lady. To be sure, folks, many of the informal roles and duties that still shape the modern office come from the actions of early first ladies. And due to the length of the broadcast in general, unless we go premium, we're going to have a maximum of 30 minutes or 45 minutes maximum. I might as well skip down to like the nitty-gritty through the summaries and paraphrases so that I won't waste y'all's time. So now, if we're talking about factors like external, internal, and partnership factors when studying about first ladies, the first thing you should be looking at is the historical periods. Now, the growth of the office of first lady, in terms of scope, roles, and size, has been neither gradual nor predictable. Often for years at a time, there was little or no change in the nature of institution. Many consecutive first ladies end up approaching the office in rather a similar manner. At other times, significant changes in the institution occurred from one first lady to the next. These changes occurred because of a variety of factors, including the actions of individual first ladies and events that were often beyond the control of the first lady or the president. Now, when you do research on first ladies, make sure to integrate Watson's treatment of partnership factors and internal and external factors into the conceptual framework that we discussed earlier. As you take notes on this, for students listening to this broadcast as well as scholars, identify when, during which of Watson's time periods, which factors had the most impact. Also, note for each period what more of those first ladies did and refrain from doing. Keep in mind Dr. Watson's opening sentence in page 43. It says, and I quote, "The growth of the office of the First Lady in terms of scope, roles, and size has been neither gradual nor predictable. Therefore, you want to keep track of how the parameters of acceptable First Lady behavior evolved, knowing trends across time in which First Ladies were trend centers and which lagged behind the trend." Now, about the historical period, pay attention to the description I just read earlier on that same page. And if you skip to the next two pages, notice how his time periods differ from two other scholars' periodization schemes that the author mentioned on page 45. Pay attention to Watson's reasons for his choices of historical periods, and especially the way he defines modern compared to the other scholars. Questions about Watson's typology to think about are the following. What do we make of the names of appearance? First, absent, traditional, aspiring, supportive, modern. Can you propose better labels? Well, I do know the first lady that happens to fit in the modern period, Nancy Reagan. That's right. I'm talking about the first lady who happens to be one of the modern trendsetters around here. And she's done plenty of things in addition to being a partner of the president, all right? Other questions you might want to think about is, when do historians usually begin the modern time period? With FDR, the 1900, after World War I? Probably not after 1974? How were the 1960s not classified as modern? Surely Watson has good reasons for choosing 1974. Why are they, and do you agree? If not, why not? Should this recent time period be divided into two? Well, these are the questions to think about as you may have your own insights into this type of typology, right? Now, there are some absent spouses in the first ladyship. Like, there's one question that got to be addressed here. What is going on in the economic, social, and political environments during this period that might account for minimal activity from most of these first ladies? What's going on that might support more active roles by the exceptions to this pattern include Julia Tyler, Sarah Polk, and Harriet Lane. If you were to find a timeline site, you can select whatever period and explore the years like 1817, 1869, and compared that to the founding period, which was from 1789 to 1817, to see if something in these environments might be affecting what these first ladies did or did not do. And keep in mind that first ladies are not always submissive stereotypes. Some first ladies are probably a good number of them would actually be what we call dragon ladies, or somewhere in between. So don't assume that all first ladies are going to be like activists and feminists, especially third wave feminists, even though there are some like Betty Ford and Rosalind Carter and Nancy Reagan, plus Michelle Obama. And don't get me started on her, but this is for like another time. Because, you know, we're talking about first ladies, and unless Michelle Obama happens to be proven to be a tranny, ball sack, and some wiener hanging between her, or her shims, lanes, Let me tell you something, folks. Women's hips are wider than men's. So, yeah, even a tranny's hips aren't that of a man, not a woman. This is basic biology. For you scientists who aren't listening to this broadcast, yeah, you're right. It is that. I mean, if Michelle Obama arguably has wider hips, then we can say conclusively that she's a female. I mean, women tend to have, you know, the obvious genitalia, and men have too. So, let's move on to the next part of the sentence, shall we? Watson's hypothesis seems to be that either due to health, bereavement, or personality, most of the first ladies during this period declined to carry on the roles established during the first period. You can check that hypothesis by looking at external factors that might have also been at play or might have been very different from those factors during the first period. The following websites I'm going to announce that you can look up for yourself, like www.presidentialtimeline.org, www.animeatlas.com/timeline.html, and www.infoplease.com/IPA/A09024.html. Now, keep in mind, this is for research purposes, so if you're curious about the historical pattern of first ladies, good websites you should go to. That'll help you take notes, that's for darn sure. As far as traditional spouses with unfulfilled possibilities, what does Watson mean by traditional here? What duties are included? What was their impact or significance for the president and his spouse? Like, what possibilities are relevant for this time period or that? Where are those limited to this time period? Or might similar possibilities be available over time for future first ladies? I mean, what partnership and external factors limited these first ladies from fulfilling the possibilities Watson considers? Despite limitations on their roles, what contributions to society and to the president's success did these first ladies make? I mean, a first lady can do more than just get in the kitchen and make your man something to eat. That's another stereotypical role, all right? Yeah, I mean, another example. There's aspiring spouses in our history in when talking about first ladies. The questions are to address here is, what new roles did these first ladies develop and which factors allowed role expression or expansion to occur? And what evidence does Watson provide about what a presidential partnership is and how a presidential partnership works for both the first lady and the president? So I'm sure that most of the first ladies in our history are supportive of their husbands. Nancy Reagan is no exception. And I'm going to get to her in a little bit, but I just need to wrap up here. Like, now, that doesn't mean I can't take calls, but if we got enough time, then I'll enable the calls to begin. So if you want to call in and give your thoughts about first ladies or whatnot, give me a call at 347-855-8578. That's 347-855-8578. That's the number to call here. Anyways, while we're at the subject of what makes a trend-setting first lady a trendsetter, which is the main question of tonight's broadcast. Now, supportive spouses, to keep in mind, the questions are the following. What does a model wife do? What behaviors match the concept for this time period? How did mass media, as an external factor, shape the roles available to first ladies during this period? Does mass media continue to impact what first ladies do and should not do during subsequent periods? Does the role and impact of mass media change over time as new media becomes available? And, of course, that at this point, we have modern spouses. And Watson categorizes Category 7 first ladies as having presidential partnerships. Yet, each one is distinct. If you're interested in comparison and contrast research, do that for each of the first ladies' partnerships in terms of specific factors in our framework and impact your partnership. Compared to the supportive spouses, in what ways are these seven first ladies modern? What has changed after 1974 to make the description modern a key characteristic of the behavior of these first ladies? Now, if you're looking at examples like Nancy Reagan and Rosalind Carr, pay special attention to Dr. Watson's closing comment on page 53. It says, and I quote, "The first lady has long since surpassed the vice president, and even the most senior advisors and cabinet secretaries, in terms of visibility and perhaps even influence both in and out of the White House." Remember Watson's assertion from the beginning of the chapter about how unpredictable the growth of the first ladyship has been. I mean, think about the relative influence on President Trump. Do we really need a new category beginning in 2017 to characterize the roles taken by a new first lady? Or do we have a trend exception in which one of Watson's other earlier categories is a better match for a first lady, Melania Trump? What kind of partnership seems to exist between this president and the first lady? We'll explore more of these questions later as we get into the future broadcasts. So if you're curious as to the answer, don't worry. I'm going to make every effort to go in there, right? Now, there is a possibility that I may have may not mention, but those of you who have not kept up with the broadcast, there was talk about Ivanka Trump for Melania Trump, since Melania was not really interested in, fulfilling her duties as first lady. It may be a rumor, it may be a legit talk, but who knows? And, of course, I think you know what this term means, but just in case someone doesn't know what it means, it means that it's a substitute or deputy for another person in a specific role. It may refer to in relationship context. Excuse me for stuttering. Like a sexual surrogate, a surrogate marriage, or surrogate pregnancy. You could view it as either like a sexual therapy or arrangement for a woman to carry and give birth. Of course, Ivanka Trump, in this context of first ladyship, she'll succeed her mother if she, and by she I mean Melania Trump, if she cannot fulfill her duties, all right? Now, Watson's most important point about the surrogates is that the prevailing view held by the president and key elites at that time was that someone needs to fulfill the traditional first lady roles. This means that the roles themselves have become institutionalized. People expected events to be organized and hosted. People expected someone to manage the White House. Now, if you're analyzing this even while listening to this broadcast, pay attention to the trends and patterns of behavior Watson describes for the surrogates, as well as the special contributions of individual first ladies. Now, if the Trumps use surrogates, which types of surrogate roles might those individuals take on? Similar? Different? I mean, in my opinion, this is a rare thing to happen. I mean, we don't get a lot of surrogates in our history, and I'm sure there's plenty of historical examples related to first lady surrogates. But if Ivanka was the new surrogate for the first lady, then this is a historical thing, like a modern surrogate. Yep. And, of course, I may get into the Nancy Reagan thing, like I said, during this broadcast, but I'd like to take a few calls before we go into the after show, which I get the feeling is less than 10 minutes away. So if you haven't called in and given your insights yet, make sure to do so before the time runs out, before time expires. So don't delay. Call tonight. And let's get to the call, shall we? We got 111, you're on the air. With these STDs? Because if you are, I'm taking a chance. And what did I tell you? I'm no homo, all right? I'm homo. No. I never said that. That was a splice. And anybody who knows me, who listens to this broadcast, like serious people, they know that I would never say that. All right? Splicing piece of crap. I never have STDs, and I never will. I'm careful, all right, with mean people, including women, all right? I mean, seriously, I'm going to be single for a long time, so who are you to say that I would get STDs, huh? Jesus Christ. What else we got here? And we got 973. You're on the air.
Oh, well, it's very true that you got HIV. Well, guy from Uncle Bernie, you know, take off your underwears off. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shove up your ass, Bernie Sanders. You know you... You know what? I'm not going to go there. I mean, people have already criticized you long enough, so I don't have to say anything to your sorry head. All right? You're just mad because you lost the Democratic primary to Hillary Clinton. So, who really gives a crap? I mean, Donald Trump won anyways. Even with you being in the primaries, that still doesn't make a difference. You ripped off a lot of people, including the Field of Burn supporters. So, what? What am I supposed to do about it, huh? Anyways, we got 862. You're on the air.
Oh, Jacob, you know, I know you're homo. Why not just join my cult? We're all robes together. It'll be so hot.
Anyways, we got... I guess that's three callers then. Anyways, I'm just going to have to skip ahead because I know it's a Fruit Bowl Wednesday. And thankfully, I pay attention to Ghost when he said, this is going to be ending up like, you know, Fruit Bowl Wednesday. I mean, God, man. And guess, and I mean, really. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and, before time runs out, even if I get to the after show, I'm going to spend the rest of this broadcast on why I think that Nancy Reagan is the trendsetter of the modern era. Now, keep in mind that First Ladyship trends are not always fashion-related. Anything a First Lady says or does would have a temporary effect on our culture. Out of all the first ladies that set up trends in American history, Nancy Reagan is one of such. What makes her a trendsetter is dependent on several things. Nancy would have an important influence on American society, including the executive branch and private lives of American citizens. Public opinion toward first ladies during the time of her first ladyship was that they should be more assertive when carrying out their duties. Like with any modern first lady, Nancy had the potential to shape public opinion on many issues, politics, and the presidency. Nancy was criticized for wearing clothes designed primarily for the rich, that includes white and red dresses, you know. But during the Gridiron Dinner singing event in 1982, she performed with an old, ill-fitting, ragged cloak. Before then, controversy existed as to the number of clothes she wore. This has led the first ladies to buy some expensive clothes to make themselves more presentable, when it can cause negative reactions by the press and the public, in addition to the positive reactions. Since the first Gridiron Dinner featuring the Reagans, media coverage slanted in favor of the first lady, or in general, the Reagan administration. Being a first lady does not always involve 100% fancy dressing. Yet the choice of clothes depends on each individual first lady. Thanks to Nancy's unconventional appearance, choice in clothing is just as important as status and the level of respect gained by everyone else. In addition to exquisiteness, Nancy Reagan was an advocate on social issues, as you probably know by now. Her focus was on drugs and their effects on society. Back in the 80s and before then, contraband drugs was a problem for Americans, convincing Nancy to conduct political activism to put a stop to it. Since her husband's first term in office, Nancy participated in a wide variety of organizational events, meetings, and television programs to curb the growth of drug consumption. The press and public opinion looked up to her positively as her activism against illegal drugs met with much success. In fact, the White House highlighted her anti-drug efforts in an obvious attempt to improve her image. Now, keep in mind, not everyone would be convinced of her activism as a method of winning everyone over, but it worked with most people. Personally, I'm even impressed by her. Tends to have a life and personality shaped by experience. Her style of leadership had its origins in Hollywood, which was the place she used to work in. She's one of the first ladies that practiced pillow influence. Now, this would give the impression that Nancy understood people with calmness, but she still won people over people. Her political views, which were mainly conservative, matched that of her husband, making the latter's presidency reflect that ideology. Stereotypes exist in relation to first ladies. And I mentioned submissiveness, all right? Her assertiveness made her a keen observer of her husband, Ronald Reagan, and anyone around him, including White House staff. It's hard to balance out between being within limits while going out and being outspoken. This type of inner struggle made Nancy Reagan aware of her presence in front of others, including her husband, as suggested by the concept of the gaze. Thus, this activity would continue the trend of politically active first ladies in subsequent presidencies. Nancy is known to be one of the first ladies to give out the impression of being a female president alongside her male counterpart. Besides political views, the Reagan couple shared their lives together and worked together to accomplish a lot of tasks, all right? They accomplished a lot together. They say two heads are better than one, but that's definitely the case. Now, since the first time they met together, Nancy did everything for Ronald. Appointment and firing of White House personnel was affected by Nancy's use of her power to handle her husband's decision-making. An obvious example of someone being fired by Nancy, causing President Reagan to lose the appearance of strength, or the image of a strong leader, was the first chief of staff, Donald Reagan. Without her, Ronald Reagan, that was the second term, okay? Reagan was fired. And without Nancy, I will admit that Ronald Reagan might not have a moderate stance when dealing with the Soviet Union. After the Reagan administration, first ladies exercised their ability to do more than just host or appear at events. They can do a lot of things. And of course, that was part of my research on Nancy Reagan. And with those details combined, I think you get a good idea of what I'm talking about here. So, while we're at the after show, which is on now. Did you get that, engineer? Yeah, I'm glad you caught that, engineer. Right now, it's the after show, and if you're making a call right now, you can only listen, but you won't be on the queue. But for those of you just on the queue, feel free to listen, and when I call your area code or by a familiar name, you got probably 3 to 4 seconds to say whatever it is, as though it's radio graffiti. All right. Now, before we get to any more calls, I'd like to read something that one of my colleagues just sent to me, and that's a she, mind you. I'm not going to name anyone's names because of confidential, privacy, you know. It's a matter of privacy, all right? Let's just leave it at that. And she said, and I quote, "That's a very good choice of First Lady, who's a trendsetter. I like your perspective on her and how you viewed her as a trendsetter in many ways. She is most certainly one of many examples of First Ladies who was a trendsetter. Her ability to be changed to help her husband's career is the most interesting part about her," which I happen to agree. "It's not easy to change who we are as a person, even if you change just in the public eye." And she makes a very good point. I mean, it's hard to change who we are, but there's just some things that we have to make up for, no matter if public or private. Now I know people are going to say, "Well, first ladies are just like robots." No, they're not. Sure, you might have that impression at some point or another, but that doesn't mean they're the Queen of England or anything. But the decent respect and common courtesy is at least needed. Just don't put unnecessary pressure on yourself if you were to encounter a first lady, like, say, Melania Trump or Ivanka Trump, who's going to be the surrogate first lady. So I really appreciate one of my colleagues just, you know, giving that thought out. So congratulations to that colleague. And in case you haven't noticed, for those of you listening and thinking, "Oh, what are you talking about? What are you trying to lecture us about this?" Well, yes, because I'm attending a seminar and I'm spreading information around like wildfire. Whatever I learned and mastered, I share it with everyone, including the fellow listeners of this broadcast. And that's what probably my life mission is to help others learn. And who knows what other potential I have, you know. But I can discuss the psychology and all this and that, but the psychology that may appear in the broadcast will be devoted to the topic firsthand that I choose to cover. Now we got, let's see, what time is it? 14:30. We got less than 12 minutes until the broadcast ends. So, you know, this may be kind of as the after show, or should I say, or ghost say, Radio Graffiti! That's right, folks. Radio Graffiti is the time of broadcast where the spectators become part of a spectacle. All you got to do is, if you're on the queue right now, then just stay on the broadcast as you're on the, already on the queue. And when I call your name on your area code, you got exactly 3 or 4 seconds to say whatever it is that is on your mind, and that's why this is called Radio Graffiti. All right, let's see. We got 3 callers on the queue, and I'm not going to be too happy about this because I may encounter a bunch of fruit bowls out there tonight. Let's see. We got 111. You're on the air. Radio Graffiti.
Hello there, guys. This is Christopher Walken. I am going to you a story about a gay pony named Bristle. Let's start. There was a Christian pony named Dr. Bristle. He is a very smart and intelligent male pony, but he does believe in the ideals of God. One night, he met someone who don't have a name, but this male pony calls himself the Butt Tucker. They later on both got drunk as the Butt Tucker looked at him in the eye and said, "Oh, Bristle baby bun, I can't wait to use my hot dog into your bun hole. It's going to be very hot," he said. As the Butt Tucker goes to a hotel and sat on the bed, he removed Bristle horse underwear as he pushed and pushed very hard for 2 hours until he comes. But the Butt Tucker replied, "Suck my marshmallow."
All right. I heard the same story. Okay, I get it. All right? Yes, my character, my pony OC, Dr. Bristle, happens to be an intelligent, Celestia-like stallion, all right? On the base that he's tall, and he's originally a tall human being who believes in God. He's a Christian and an intelligent guy. Yes, that's exactly the personality I have. But what I never do in real life is get drunk. For a quarter of a century, I never have a touch of alcohol in my system, all right? I never had a single drop of alcohol, as far as you and I know. Whatever you do in bars and all whatnot, it's not my business. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't get drunk. I choose not to drink. I'm a teetotaler, all right? That means I'm absent from alcohol or any alcoholic intake in my life, all right? I'm not a Mormon nor a Muslim, but just a Christian who chooses not to drink. I'm my own person, dang it. And if you're, I know what Christopher Walken or whoever claims to be Christopher Walken was reading about my pony getting drunk and then having some homoerotica with some freaking butt stalker. I got something to say for those of you spreading that slanderous lie, shoving up your ass, all right? Now, I do appreciate the people, some of the bronies and my fellow compatriots, you know, spreading the word about my OC out there on the internet, all right? I really do. But it's up to me to make more things work, all right? Including fanfic projects and... I don't know if I'm going to use Source Filmmaker because uncertainty related to technology. I got like two computers on the desk that I work at, so I don't need one crashing or the other. I mean, things will change over time, so I got to stay on top of things. Until then, I won't try that out, Source Filmmaker thing. But I have that in mind somewhere contemplating in the future. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's just move on with the broadcast. We got 973, you're on the air, Radio Graffiti.
Well, right now we're going to work on a cartoon featuring your OC. Me and Christopher Walkins are going to be in it, so, well, after all, it's about a gay pony getting banged by four-year-old giraffe men, and after all, he got the AIDS.
Shove it up your ass, Bernie Sanders. My character would never go out of his way to rape anybody. Do you understand? I mean, Jesus Christ, man. This whole Pizzagate thing, if you're alluding to Pizzagate, then that's not funny. Good Lord. If Ghost were to ever listen to these broadcasts I conducted, he'll know who's the buttstuckers. He'll know who to... you know, go after if it was somebody who makes reference to Pizzagate and thinks it's funny. I don't swing that way, all right? I go after, you know what, in real life, I date women who are close to my age, and I tend to do that with even ladies older than me, including the girlfriend I broke up with, all right? It's not like y'all give a crap anyways, I'm just saying. Plus, I may have a new date every once in a while, but I'm going to still be a single man. But it's not going to be guaranteed, because who knows what's going to happen in the long run. You can't really speculate on those things, because you could be wrong, you could be right, who knows? God knows. All right, let's see. We got 862. You're on the air, Rio Graffiti.
Oh, Jacob, when you join my cult, you might as well bring your OC's horseradish. I think it'll be so delicious when we all eat it together. Yum, yum.
Man. Jesus Christ. I mean, horseradish? Oh, my gosh. And for those of you thinking, oh, is it the regular condiment here? No, that's not the condiment you think of. nor is it a perennial plant, all right? I'm not talking about a root vegetable used as a spice. It's something more feces and all that crap. Oh, my gosh. You know, give me the mic. Like I said, I don't swing that way, all right? It's all that disgusting. I mean, if you were to take a whiff of America right now, even though we got Donald Trump and others of his kind in office, like appointed for court positions and I suppose executive positions, the rest of America, though, if you were to take a breath, get a deep breath, it just smells like smelly, stinky crap. It almost smells like the damn carnival urinal, for Christ's sake, man. I mean, it stinks. I mean, bleh. Damn it. It stinks. Jesus Christ. All right, man, I'm going to take a couple more calls, and then I'm out of here. I knew you people who are trolling me out there, you're going to fruiting up, man. I guarantee you'll be fruiting up. They're fruiting up, for Christ's sake, man. We got, oh, Jesus Christ, 973, you're on here.
Why are you taking my call again? Why don't you take one? I'm busy tapping to your picture, old C.
You son of a bitch. Gosh. Damn it, Bernie Sanders. What the hell is your problem, man? What the hell is your problem? Instead of just jerking off to whenever I talk, all right? Why don't you just go be like Master Roshi and be a hermit, all right? And go out there and find some chick or something, all right? Good God. And I guarantee you that more ladies will reject somebody like you than, say, Master Roshi. And for you anime watchers out there, anime fans, I'm talking about Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. Yeah, that old man. Anyways, give me the mic. That freaking mic. I'm not going to take any more calls right now, because I may end the episode from there since we got less than 2 minutes in the broadcast. All right? Now, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in, past callers, past listeners, as well as the current ones. So, I'll be back sometime Thursday, and I may not be around by Friday because I'm going to attend a special event somewhere in Central Arkansas, all right? It's going to be for people with special needs, and apparently because of the fact I have Asperger's syndrome, thought it may be a good time to just take a break from research and just associate myself with my friends, okay? And if not, I'll still be available by Friday. So keep an eye out for future episodes other than Friday, all right? And anyways, I'll be back next week if I don't host on Friday. At same place, same time, ideally Monday through Friday, okay? I'll talk to y'all tomorrow with more knowledge about First Ladies of the White House. Good night, everybody.